Section 10 of The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath by Howard Phillips Lovecraft. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Martin Rato. Part 10. Before no golden dais had Randolph Carter come, nor was there any august circle of crowned and haloed beings with narrowed eyes, long-lobed ears, thin nose, and pointed chin, whose kinship to the carven faison and granite might stamp them as those to whom a dreamer might pray. Save for the one tower room, the onyx castle atop Kadath was dark, and the masters were not there. Carter had come to unknown Kadath in the cold waste, but he had not found the gods. Yet still the lurid light glowed in that one tower room whose size was so little less than that of all outdoors, and whose distant walls and roof were so nearly lost to sight in thin, curling mists. Earth's gods were not there, it was true, but of subtler and less visible presences there could be no lack. Where the mild gods are absent, the other gods are not unrepresented, and certainly the onyx castle of castles was far from tenantless. In what outrageous form or forms terror would next reveal itself, Carter could by no means imagine. He felt that his visit had been expected, and wondered how close a watch had all along been kept upon him by the crawling chaos Nyarlathotep. It is Nyarlathotep, horror of infinite shapes and dread soul and messenger of the other gods, that the fungus moon beasts serve. And Carter thought of the black galley that had vanished when the tide of battle turned against the toad-like abnormalities on the jagged rock in the sea. Reflecting upon these things, he was staggering to his feet in the midst of his nightmare company, when there rang without warning through that pale, litten, and limitless chamber the hideous blast of a demon trumpet. Three times pealed that frightful, brazen scream, and when the echoes of the third blast had died chucklingly away, Randolph Carter saw that he was alone. Whither, why, and how the ghouls and night-gaunts had been snatched from sight was not for him to divine. He knew only that he was suddenly alone, and that whatever unseen powers lurked mockingly around him were no powers of Earth's friendly dreamland. Presently, from the chamber's uttermost reaches, a new sound came. This, too, was a rhythmic trumpeting, but of a kind far removed from the three raucous blasts which had dissolved his goodly cohorts. In this low fanfare echoed all the wonder and melody of ethereal dream, exotic vistas of unimagined loveliness floating from each strange chord and subtly alien cadence. Odors of incense came to match the golden notes, and overhead a great light dawned, its colors changing in cycles unknown to Earth's spectrum, and following the song of the trumpets in weird symphonic harmonies. Torches flared in the distance, and the beat of drums throbbed nearer amidst waves of tense expectancy. Out of the thinning mists and the cloud of strange incenses filed twin columns of giant black slaves with loincloths of iridescent silk. Upon their heads were strapped vast helmet-like torches of glittering metal from which the fragrance of obscure balsam spread out in fumous spirals. In their right hands were crystal wands whose tips were carven into leering chimeras, while their left hands grasped long, thin, silver trumpets which they blew in turn. Armlets and anklets of gold they had, and between each pair of anklets stretched a golden chain that held its wearer to a sober gait. That they were true black men of Earth's dreamland was at once apparent, but it seemed less likely that their rites and costumes were holy things of our Earth. 10 feet from Carter, the column stopped, and as they did so, each trumpet flew abruptly to its bearer's thick lips. Wild and ecstatic was the blast that followed, and wilder still the cry that chorus just after from dark throats somehow made shrill by strange artifice. Then down the wide lane betwixt the two columns a lone figure strode. A tall, slim figure with the young face of an antique pharaoh, gay with prismatic robes and crowned with a golden scent that glowed with inherent light. Close up to Carter strode that regal figure, whose proud carriage and smart features had in them the fascination of a dark god or fallen archangel, and around whose eyes there lurked the languid sparkle of capricious humor. It spoke, and in its mellow tones there rippled the wild music of Lethean streams. "Randolph Carter," said the voice, "you have come to see the great ones whom it is unlawful for men to see. Watchers have spoken of this thing, and the other gods have grunted as they rolled and tumbled mindlessly to the sound of thin flutes in the black ultimate void where broods the demon sultan whose name no lips dare speak aloud. When Barzai the wise climbed Hathek Kia to see the greater ones dance and howl above the clouds in the moonlight, he never returned. The other gods were there, and they did what was expected. Zenig of Aphorat sought to reach unknown Kadath in the cold waste, and his skull is now set in a ring on the little finger of one whom I need not name. But you, Randolph Carter, have braved all things of Earth's dreamland, and burn still with the flame of quest. You came not as one curious, but as one seeking his due. Nor have you failed ever in reverence toward the mild gods of Earth. Yet have these gods kept you from the marvelous sunset city of your dreams, and wholly through their own small covetousness, for verily they crave the weird loveliness of that which your fancy had fashioned, and vowed that henceforward no other spot should be their abode. They are gone now from their castle on unknown Kadath to dwell in your marvelous city. All through its palaces of vain marble they revel by day, and when the sun sets, they go out in the perfumed gardens and watch the golden glory on temples and colonnades, arched bridges and silver basined fountains, and wide streets with blossom-laden urns and ivory statues and gleaming rows. And when night comes, they climb tall terraces in the dew and sit on carved benches of porphyry, scanning the stars, or lean over pale balustrades to gaze at the town's steep northward slopes, where one by one the little windows and old peaked gables shine softly out with the calm yellow light of homely candles. The gods love your marvelous city, and walk no more than the ways of the gods. They have forgotten the high places of earth and the mountains that know their youth. The earth has no longer any gods that are gods, and only the other ones from outer space hold sway on unremembered Kadath. Far away in a valley of your own childhood, Randolph Carter, play the heedless great ones. You have dreamed too well, O wise arch-dreamer, for you have drawn dreams gods away from the world of all men's visions, to that which is wholly yours. Having builded out of your boyhood's small fancies a city more lovely than all the phantoms that have gone before, it is not well that Earth's gods leave their thrones for the spider to spin on, and their realm for the others to sway in the dark manner of others? Fain would the powers from outside bring chaos and horror to you, Randolph Carter, who are the cause of their upsetting. But that they know it is by you alone that the gods may be sent back to their world. In that half-waking dreamland which is yours, no power of uttermost night may pursue, and only you can send the selfish great ones gently out of your marvelous sunset city, back through the northern twilight to their wonted place atop unknown Kadath in the cold waste. So, Randolph Carter, in the name of the other gods, I spare you and charge you to seek that sunset city which is yours, and to send thence the drowsy truant gods for whom the dream world waits. Not hard to find is that rosial fever of the gods, that fanfare of supernal trumpets and clash of immortal cymbals, that mystery whose place and meaning have haunted you through the halls of waking and the gulfs of dreaming, and tormented you with hints of vanished memory and the pain of lost things awesome and momentous. Not hard to find is that symbol and relic of your days of wonder, for truly it is but the stable and eternal gem wherein all that wonder sparkles crystallized to light your evening path. Behold, it is not over unknown seas, but back over well-known years that your quest must go, back to the bright strange things of infancy and the quick sun-drenched glimpses of magic that old scenes brought to wide young eyes. For know you that your gold and marble city of wonder is only the sum of what you have seen and loved in youth. It is the glory of Boston's hillside roofs and western windows aflame with sunset, of the flower-fragrant common and the great dome on the hill, and the tangle of gables and chimneys in the violet valley where the many-bridged Charles flows drowsily. These things you saw, Randolph Carter, when your nurse first wheeled you out in the springtime, and they will be the last things you will ever see with eyes of memory and of love. And there is antique Salem with its brooding years and spectral marbleheads scaling its rocky precipices into past centuries, and the glory of Salem's towers and spires seen afar from Marblehead's pastures across the harbor against the setting sun. There is Providence, quaint and lordly on its seven hills over the blue harbor, with terraces of green leading up to steeples and citadels of living antiquity, and Newport climbing wraith-like from its dreaming breakwater. Arkham is there, with its moss-grown gambrel roofs and the rocky rolling meadows behind it, and antediluvian Kingsport, hoary with stacked chimneys and deserted quays and overhanging gables, and the marvel of high cliffs and the milky misted ocean with tolling buoys beyond. Cool vales in Concord, cobbled lands in Portsmouth, twilight bends of rustic New Hampshire roads where giant elms half-hide white farmhouse walls and creaking well-sweeps, Gloucester's salt wharves and Truro's windy willows, vistas of distant steeple towns and hills beyond hills along the north shore, hushed stony slopes and low ivied cottages in the lee of huge boulders in Rhode Island's back country. Scent of the sea and fragrance of the fields, spell of the dark woods and joy of the orchards and gardens at dawn. These, Randolph Carter, are your city, for they are yourself. New England bore you, and into your soul she poured a liquid loveliness which cannot die. This loveliness, molded, crystallized, and polished by years of memory and dreaming, is your terraced wonder of elusive sunsets and to find that marble parapet with curious urns and carven rail, and descend at last these endless balustraded steps to the city of broad squares and prismatic fountains, you need only to turn back to the thoughts and visions of your wistful boyhood. Look, through that window shine the stars of eternal night. Even now they're shining above the scenes you've known and cherished, drinking of their charm that they may shine more lovely over the gardens of dream. There is Antares. He is winking at this moment over the roofs of Tremont Street, and you could see him from your window on Beacon Hill. Out beyond those stars yawn the gulfs from whence my mindless masters have sent me. Some day you too may traverse them, but if you are wise you will beware such folly. For of those mortals who have been and returned, only one preserves a mind unshattered by the pounding, clawing horrors of the void. Terrors and blasphemies gnaw at one another for space, and there is more evil in the lesser ones than in the greater, even as you know from the deeds of those who sought to deliver you into my hands, whilst I myself harbored no wish to shatter you, and would indeed have helped you hither long ago, had I not been elsewhere busy, and certain that you would yourself find the way. Shun then the outer hells, and stick to the calm, lovely things of your youth. Seek out your marvelous city, and drive thence the recreant great ones, sending them back gently to those scenes which are of their own youth, and which wait uneasy for their return. Easier even than the way of dim memory is the way I will prepare for you. See, there comes hither a monstrous Shantak, led by a slave who for your peace of mind had best keep invisible. Mount and be ready. There, Yogash the Black will help you on the scaly horror. Steer for that brightest star just south of the zenith. It is Vega, and in 2 hours will be just above the terrace of your sunset city. Steer for it only till you hear a far-off singing in the high ether. Higher than that lurks madness, so rein your Shantak when the first note lures. Look then back to earth, and you will see shining the deathless altar flame of Ered-Na from the sacred roof of a temple. That temple is in your desiderate sunset city, so steer for it before you heed the singing and are lost. When you draw nigh the city, steer for the same high parapet whence of old you scanned the outspread glory, prodding the Shantak till he cry aloud. That cry the great ones will hear and know as they sit on their perfumed terraces, and there will come upon them such a homesickness that all of your city's wonders will not console them for the absence of Kadath's grim castle and the shent of eternal stars that crowns it. Then must you land amongst them with the Shantak, and let them see and touch that noisome and hippocephalic bird, meanwhile discoursing to them of unknown Kadath which you will so lately have left, and telling them how its boundless halls are lovely and unlighted, where of old they used to leap and revel in supernal radiance. And the Shantak will talk to them in the manner of Shantaks, but it will have no powers of persuasion beyond the recalling of elder days. Over and over you must speak to the wandering great ones of their home and youth, till at last they will weep and ask to be shown the returning path they have forgotten. Thereat can you loose the waiting Shantak, sending him skyward with the homing cry of his kind, hearing which the great ones will prance and jump with antique mirth, and forthwith stride after the loathly bird in the fashion of gods through the deep gulfs of heaven to Kadath's familiar towers and domes. Then will the marvelous sunset city be yours to cherish and inhabit forever. And once more will Earth's gods rule the dreams of men from their accustomed seat. Go now. The casement is open and the stars await outside. Already your Shantak wheezes and titters with impatience. Steer for Vega through the night, but turn when the singing sounds. Forget not this warning, lest horrors unthinkable suck you into the gulf of shrieking and ululant madness. Remember the other gods. They are great and mindless and terrible, and lurk in the outer voids. They are good gods to shun. Hey, Shanta Nigi, you are off. Send back Earth's gods to their haunts on unknown Kadath, and pray to all space that you may never meet me in my thousand other forms. Farewell, Randolph Carter, and beware, for I am Nyarlathotep, the Crawling Chaos. And Randolph Carter, gasping and dizzy on his hideous Shantak, shot screamingly into space toward the cold blue glare of Boreal Vega, looking but once behind him at the clustered and chaotic turrets of the Onyx Nightmare wherein still glowed the lone lurid light of that window above the air and the clouds of Earth's dreamland. Great polypus horrors slid darkly past, and unseen batwings beat multitudinous around him. But still he clung to the unwholesome mane of that loathly and hippocephalic-scaled bird. The stars danced mockingly, almost shifting now and then to form pale signs of doom that one might wonder one had not seen and feared before. And ever the winds of Nether howled of vague blackness and loneliness beyond the cosmos. Then through the glittering vault ahead there fell a hush of portent, and all the winds and horrors slunk away as night things slink away before dawn. Trembling in waves that golden wisps of nebula made weirdly visible, there rose a timid hint of far-off melody, droning in faint chords that our own universe of stars knows not. And as that music grew, the Shantak raised its ears and plunged ahead, and Carter likewise bent to catch each lovely strain. It was a song, but not the song of any voice. Night and the spheres sang it, and it was old when space and Nyarlathotep and the other gods were born. Faster flew the Shantak, and lower bent the rider, drunk with the marvel of strange gulfs, and whirling in the crystal coils of outer magic. Then came too late the warning of the evil one, the sardonic caution of the demon legate who had bidden the seeker beware the madness of that song. Only to taunt had Nyarlathotep marked out the way to safety in the marvelous sunset city. Only to mock had that black messenger revealed the secret of these truant gods, whose steps he could easily lead back at will. For madness and the void's wild vengeance are Nyarlathotep's only gifts to the presumptuous, and frantic though the rider strove to turn his disgusting steed, that leering, tittering Shantak coursed on, impetuous and relentless, flapping its great slippery wings in malignant joy, and headed for those unhallowed pits whither no dreams reach. That last amorphous blight of nethermost confusion, where bubbles and blasphemes at infinity's center the mindless demon Sultan Azathoth, whose name no lips dare speak aloud. Unswerving and obedient to the foul legate's orders, that hellish bird plunged onward through shoals of shapeless lurkers and caperers in darkness, and vacuous herds of drifting entities that pawed and groped and groped and pawed, the nameless larvae of the other gods that are like them, blind and without mind, and possessed of singular hungers and thirsts. Onward, unswerving and relentless, and tittering hilariously to watch the chuckling and hysterics into which the risen song of night and the spheres had turned, that eldritch scaly monster bore its helpless rider, hurtling and shooting, cleaving the utmost rim and spanning the outermost abysses, leaving behind the stars and the realms of matter, and darting meteor-like through stark formlessness toward those inconceivable, unlighted chambers beyond time, wherein Azathoth gnaws shapeless and ravenous amidst the muffled, maddening beat of vile drums and the thin, monotonous whine of accursed flutes. Onward, onward, through the screaming, cackling, and blackly populous gulfs, and then from some dim, blessed distance there came an image and a thought to Randolph Carter the Doomed. Too well had Nyarlathotep planned his mocking and his tantalizing, for he had brought up that which no gusts of icy terror could quite efface. Home, New England, Beacon Hill, the waking world. For know you that your gold and marble city of wonder is only the sum of what you've seen and loved in youth, the glory of Boston's hillside roofs and western windows aflame with sunset, of the flower-fragrant common and the great dome on the hill and the tangle of gables and chimneys in the violet valley where the many-bridged Charles flows drowsily. This loveliness, molded, crystallized, and polished by years of memory and dreaming, is your terraced wonder of elusive sunsets. And to find that marble parapet with curious urns and carven rail, and descend at last those endless balustraded steps to the city of broad squares and prismatic fountains, you need only to turn back to the thoughts and visions of your wistful boyhood. Onward, onward, dizzily onward to ultimate doom through the blackness where sightless feelers pawed and slimy snouts jostled and nameless things tittered and tittered and tittered. But the image and the thought had come, and Randolph Carter knew clearly that he was dreaming and only dreaming, and that somewhere in the background the world of waking and the city of his infancy still lay. Words came again. You need only turn back to the thoughts and visions of your wistful boyhood. Turn, turn. Blackness on every side, but Randolph Carter could turn. Thick though the rushing nightmare that clutched his senses, Randolph Carter could turn and move. He could move. And if he chose, he could leap off the evil shantak that bore him hurtlingly doomward at the orders of Nyarlathotep. He could leap off and dare those depths of night that yawned interminably down, those depths of fear whose terrors yet could not exceed the nameless doom that lurked waiting at chaos's core. He could turn and move and leap. He could. He would. He would. He would. Off that vast hippocephalic abomination leaped the doomed and desperate dreamer, and down through endless voids of sentient blackness he fell. Aeons reeled, universes died and were born again. Stars became nebulae, and nebulae became stars, and still Randolph Carter fell through those endless voids of sentient blackness. Then in the slow creeping course of eternity, the utmost cycle of the cosmos churned itself into another futile completion, and all things became again as they were unreckoned kalpas before. Matter and light were born anew as space once had known them, and comets, suns, and worlds sprang flaming into life, though nothing survived to tell that they had been and gone, always and always, back to no first beginning. And there was a firmament again, and a wind, and a glare of purple light in the eyes of the falling dreamer. There were gods and presences and wills, beauty and evil, and the shrieking of noxious night robbed of its prey. For through the unknown ultimate cycle had lived a thought and a vision of a dreamer's boyhood, and now there were remade a waking world and an old cherished city to body and to justify these things. Out of the void Sngak the violet gas had pointed the way, and archaic Nodens was bellowing his guidance from unhinted deeps. Stars swelled to dawns, and dawns burst into fountains of gold, carmine, and purple, and still the dreamer fell. Cries rent the ether as ribbons of light beat back the fiends from outside, and hoary Nodens raised a howl of triumph when Nyarlathotep, close on his quarry, stopped, baffled by a glare that seared his formless hunting horrors to gray dust. Randolph Carter had indeed descended at last the wide marmoreal flights to his marvelous city, for he was come again to the fair New England world that had wrought him. So to the organ chords of morning's myriad whistles, and dawn's blaze thrown dazzling through purple panes by the great gold dome of the state house on the hill, Randolph Carter leaped shoutingly awake within his Boston room. Birds sang in hidden gardens, and the perfume of trellised vines came wistful from arbors his grandfather had reared. Beauty and light glowed from classic mantle and carven cornice and walls grotesquely figured, while a sleek black cat rose yawning from hearthside sleep that his master's start and shriek had disturbed. And vast infinities away, past the gate of deeper slumber in the enchanted wood and the garden lands and the Serenarian sea and the twilight reaches of Inquinoc, the crawling chaos Nyarlathotep strode brooding into the onyx castle atop unknown Kadath in the cold waste, and taunted insolently the mild gods of earth whom he had snatched abruptly from their scented revels in the marvelous sunset city. End of part 10. End of The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath by Howard Phillips Lovecraft.